This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we are here. We guest Rebecca Sanders, and later on, Rebecca Sanders is with the Arizona Republic reporter. Steve Kraft will be joining us later on. He is a recently retired reporter from Fox 10. That retired designation important because we're going to talk about unionization. Rebecca's been involved in unionization effort at the Republic, and Steve can be candid because he no longer works for a living.
So, that's right.
So he's got nothing to lose. So, Rebecca, you've been publicly identified with the effort to unionize reporters at the Republic. I haven't read much about this in the Republic. We talk about that. That's an interesting dilemma. How is there anybody that have there been articles in the Republic on this at all?
Not specifically on this effort, but one of our great supporters, E.J. Montini, wrote a great column over the Labor Day weekend about how unions have protected workplaces, you know, brought us the 5-day work week, the 40-hour work week, and all kinds of other protections. So we know that we have strong support throughout the newsroom.
But he has not dealt specifically with what's going on there. That's a touchy area you're writing about yourself, essentially.
We're taking to social media, creating videos, getting our word out there in a lot of different ways.
Okay. The big question to you. Okay. You've been involved in the effort to unionize the reporters at the Arizona Republic. Why?
Well, first of all, it's not just the reporters. It's all the non-management employees in the newsroom, and that includes photographers, videographers, our web producers, our copy editors. So it's a wide effort. Here, the industry is, really facing a lot of cuts. We've seen the newsroom at the Arizona Republic shrink from about 425 journalists to about 130 since I've been there 12 years. So we have just seen a lot of problems in terms of, our minimum salaries being really low. So it's hard to attract experienced journalists, issues with journalists going for decades without cost of living raises, health insurance costs skyrocketing. And it really impacts the families and the bottom lines of all these really hardworking journalists who are essential to our community. You know, we bring you the high school sports stories. We, tell you about the best hikes in Sedona. We investigate fraud and hold politicians accountable. Without a strong newspaper where the journalists feel like they can do their best work and build a future here, a long-term future at the newspaper, then we're really missing out as a community.
So, you mentioned staff cuts, long-term staff cuts in the newsroom. How does a union stave that off?
Well, we can ask for the company to treat its workers with more dignity. Instead of just dropping a bomb on the newsroom once a year, which is, hey, today we laid off X number of people, we could negotiate to have a longer period of notice so that people can get their things in order, get their resume out there and have a little bit of runway. We can negotiate for longer severance. Our company right now is looking at merging with another huge newspaper company, which only gives about 2.5 days of severance per year of work. That's not a lot of runway when you suddenly find that you've lost your job. So there are just a million different ways that we could improve our workplace. And we are asking all the people that we're talking to please tell us how we can make their work lives better through coming together and working together through a union.
So on the issue of newsroom staffing, I think what I'm hearing you say is union may be able to help cushion it for the employees, but it doesn't address the issue of overall staffing levels.
Well, businesses are allowed by federal law to make the business decisions that they want to make.
And the Republic is not alone in that trend of cutting newsroom
staff. Absolutely. It's across It's across the country, and we have worked so hard, everyone in the newsroom, to implement all the different initiatives that our company has asked us to do, to bring in new subscriptions, to bring it, you know, to write stories that appeal to a wider audience, all kinds of things to try to help the business. And we're proud to do that. We're part of our union campaign is asking folks to subscribe, because without a large subscriber base, the newspaper can't continue.
Yeah, I personally must say I've seen those.
Great.
You know,
I hope, you know, some of your listeners will subscribe after this.
You know, it is. I mean, you're in a situation. It certainly appears to be a situation of scarcity, that that newspaper subscribership is declining. Certainly, you know, a lot of classified ads have simply disappeared. You used to see anybody looking for a job, looking to personally sell something, any number of other things. Those are gone. They're in Craigslist, or they're cars.com. They're somewhere else, but they're not in the newspaper. The big retailers are still there, but classified ads is pretty much a thing of the past.
Well, there's no doubt that Google and Facebook in particular have taken billions of dollars in advertising revenue that once was in the hands of newspapers and media companies. And they, you know, those social media platforms get a huge amount of traffic, and they get a huge amount of revenue based on the coverage that we're creating, that people are sharing, and we're not getting a cut of it. But, you know, to say that there's nothing to go around, I think is false. You know, we're seeing executives being paid millions, getting huge bonuses when they're laying people off. We're seeing shareholders, you know, getting dividend checks. Like, across the industry, there's money, and the decision making is where it goes.
So is the immediate precipitation, no, there has been the discussion. Gannett is going to possibly sell out to this other outfit. Is that the immediately precipitating event? Is that what got this ball rolling?
Well, it's a combination of factors. In January, we faced another round of layoffs, and you may remember that one of the people that was laid off was the beloved Pulitzer Prize winning cartoonist Steve Benson.
That was the shocker. That was, so talk about somebody being a conspicuous riff. That was certainly the most conspicuous.
It really rocked the community, because he had been such a legend. I mean, I run into people constantly who say, oh, I have a Steve Benson drawing framed in my living room, you know? So everyone was just really sad to see him go, and just kind of like in such a shocking and somewhat callous way.
I think even people who didn't read most of the news always looked at Benson.
Sure. Yeah. And we're really proud that he made our logo, which is an amazing saguaro cactus with a pencil for the stock. We just are so grateful that he did that for us. So that was one of the factors. The other factor was that in the winter, we were facing a potential hostile takeover from a company called Digital First that's run by a hedge fund, and they have a track record of buying newsrooms and slashing them to pieces.
Hostile meaning Gannett didn't want to sell.
Correct. And Gannett reached out to all of its employees, including the unions and the national union, the News Guild, to ask them for help fighting this takeover off.
Unions, am I correct? There are no unions at the Republic now, or are there in some fields?
Well, our umbrella company, Gannett, has about a dozen unionized papers, the Detroit Free Press, the Indianapolis Star. And then the National News Guild also helped to fight off this hostile takeover. Okay. So everyone stepped up to do that successfully. And then we learned that essentially at the same time, Gannett, our umbrella company, was in talks for this merger with Gatehouse Media, which is a private equity-run newspaper company that has a track record of coming into newspapers and slashing them to pieces. So it was just quite a head spinner to go from helping the company fight off a merger that would have cut jobs to the company saying, we're going to do another merger that's probably going to cut jobs.
Now, are you getting help from somebody at a national level in this effort?
Absolutely. There's newsrooms across the country that have organized in the past couple of years. And so we're getting advice from all of those shops so that we can understand what's worked for them so that we can apply it here and be the most successful that we can be.
We'll pick this up and bring Steve Kraft into the discussion when we return, talking about unionization at the Arizona Republic. And we return in the think tank in just a minute.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, there is a unionization effort amongst journalists at the Arizona Republic, and you will by and large not find a story about this in the Arizona Republic, so you have to listen here. Maybe I've seen a couple things in the New Times. Certainly other places have not shied away from dealing with this. Rebecca Sanders is one of the organizers. She's here with us. By the way, we had the wayside was scattered with people who didn't want to talk about this publicly, on both sides, I will add, for a variety of reasons. But Steve Kraft is retired, so he can say anything. He'll join in with us here in just a minute. But we were talking about outside help, but you said the National Guild, I think, which is basically union for reporters nationwide. What you said they're providing help. What does that consist of?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm proud to talk about this, and all of my colleagues who are working on this effort are proud to talk about it. So I'm so glad to be here. Sure. So, you know, we've gotten advice on how to bring people together, how to talk to folks, how to, you know, explain what a union can help us do in the newsroom to improve our colleagues' lives. We've looked at contracts that other newspapers have. We've hosted parties. It's, you know, we're getting advice from everywhere we can and trying to get support from everywhere we can.
I have one question about, you know, when I think of unions, generally I think of a class of people where they are relatively interchangeable, where you get paid whatever a base is plus seniority bonuses. You know, you get paid more overtime. That's typical, longevity raises. But clearly, every journalist is not the same. How does unionization work in an environment where people do work of widely variant quality?
Well, look, the most prestigious newsrooms in the United States have been unionized for decades. Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Associated Press, Washington Post, Reuters. They've been doing excellent Pulitzer Prize winning work.
So you're not breaking new ground here.
Yeah.
There's a model.
Exactly. And in every contract that I've seen in newsrooms, there's a ability for the company to give merit increases. So all it does is provide the goal is that it would provide a stable schedule of salaries so that journalists can know how they will move up and they can build a long-term career. And then when they do great work, they can be rewarded for it. Some folks might think that journalists make a ton of money, and maybe some in TV, I don't know, Steve, you could say may do that, but
not really.
Okay, so
we'll
you know, our starting salary before the unionization effort was around $34,000. So I'm not saying that we're minimum wage, but definitely our journalists want to know that they can have a family, buy a home, and put away some savings over the course of their career.
And for that starting salary, what's a typical background for an entry reporter?
Typically a bachelor's degree from a journalism school, some internship experience, and possibly 1 or 2 years of experience either at the Republic or elsewhere. But we also have seen that we've got folks who have years and years of experience who are in at the entry level or in those lower rungs, even though, you know, they're a decade or more into their career.
Put in perspective of Arizona context, that's ballpark what we pay starting teachers. I think it's fair to say it's in that neighborhood. How has management responded to your efforts so far?
Well, they started by, you know, trying to make things better, which I think everybody was really appreciative of. They, you know, some folks got...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but put a time frame on this. When did this all start?
Around the
union efforts.
We started organizing around January, and then management started making moves in June. And so they provided some much needed raises to some folks.
My understanding is that the biggest chunk of those raises went to entry people.
I believe so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that is one of the places that is, you know, the lowest paid right now.
Mm-hmm. And I think you told us off air in between that it took that such starting salary from about 34 to maybe 37 or in that
somewhere area. Around there is what I've been told. So,
but that's not a hard published number. There's not a scale that says this is the minimum pay.
At this point, without having a certified union, there is no exact schedule of salaries per experience level. We did also receive from management some salary schedules that are ranges after we asked for them for about a year, and they finally gave them to us.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Rebecca Sanders. We'll follow your efforts, maybe even get to read about this in the Republic, though I'm not holding my breath on that one. It's a little touchy.
And please subscribe.
Thank you very much. We'll be back. We'll talk with Steve Kraft about this and other issues when we return in just a moment in the Think Tank.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, our thanks to Rebecca Sanders, one of the organizers of unionization efforts at the Arizona Republic. Steve Kraft, you're recently retired out of the business and free to come down on anything any way you wish. What's your take?
It's scary, isn't it, being candid?
You don't get to hide behind.
I have nowhere to hide.
I had a lot of people wanted to hide on this one.
Isn't that interesting?
More probably than any single show I did. Now, some of it was the terms and conditions. I had some folks. I'll come on, but I don't want to debate. And I said, you know what? Inherently, this is. You know, there's a yes and a no side of this, and
well, you know,
and I just thought it would be too sterile to have, you know, totally isolated segments. And,
well, that's what a good journalist like you, that's what you want to do. You want to get.
I'm not a journalist. I just play one on the road. They put a microphone in front of me, you know.
Maybe nobody's really a journalist. We're just talking, right? But I do think that you do want to get two sides of every story. It makes it more interesting.
Well, so, you know, I think sometimes more than two.
Whole,
that's an old idiom about two. Yeah, yeah. Or there are
two.
Other perspectives. Right. Oftentimes what is presented as everybody knows taint so.
And this isn't exactly binary, but we do have the question of should they be in a union or not? Should they be recognized and be able to collectively bargain or not? So there is a bit of a binary choice in this case.
I think
case.
They're going to get – I mean, with NLRB will come in, they'll force an election, and I don't – it will not be unanimous, but they will win.
Well, and why shouldn't they? If you're a reporter, and I know how hard it is to be a reporter, how many hours you work, how many days a week you work, how many holidays you work, how many double shifts you work. I mean, I went through all of that. And they're not getting paid. And increasingly, it's happening in television where they are hiring cheap. They're hiring very inexperienced people, some of whom are talented.
Yeah, you left. They probably took your salary, hired three or four people.
Yep. Or didn't hire anybody.
Or hired two or one.
Or nobody.
And saved the money.
Yes, that's correct. But
and this isn't an industry. I remember being interviewed many years ago. There'd be like a crew of three or four people would come out. You know, you'd have at least two. You'd have a reporter and then you'd have a photographer.
when I did network stuff, did a photographer, a reporter, and then a sound guy. And then I noticed the equipment got smaller and you carried your own camera and you did everything. And sometimes they would take, they'd take a shot of them. They'd run the camera, take a shot of themselves. So they'd cut it in like as if it were.
Yeah, that's called a one man band.
Yeah.
Or one woman band, one person band. And but you can, as a viewer, you can always tell. I mean, ideally, you should have at least a two-person crew in the field if possible.
Viewer, I don't know if – I think you could tell. I don't think most people noticed, and I think they figured that
maybe
out.
Maybe they – I don't know. I mean,
and, maybe – or even if you know – it's kind of like I've done TV interviews on Skype, and it's obvious that it's Skype, but I think as a viewer, you just say, okay, that's – all right. So they weren't there. They called in. Big deal.
If people watch crummy quality YouTube videos for entertainment, maybe they'll watch anything on the news, which is deeply depressing to someone like me. I used to worry about how the camera angles were
total,
and how the lighting
total
was.
Perfection. You know, essentially when we got away from Ma Bell and those big old heavy black phones that did have perfect sound quality, and we now have cell phones and we tolerate, even digital cell phones, we tolerate a lower sound quality than we used to have. We're used to that. So what if, as long as I can hear what somebody's saying and listen to the inflection, what do you get for that? You get the reach. I can, you can call somebody in Syria.
Well, let me tell you what the problem is.
And get a video. Yeah.
Let me tell you what the problem is in local newsrooms. In 2008, we had the terrible recession, the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. Everybody I knew in television took a pay cut. Management called everyone in and said, look, these are tough times. We want to keep you, but we're going to have to cut your pay. Are you okay with that? And people went along with it.
What kind of order magnitude of a cut were we talking
about? At least 10%.
10%.
At least. And some of them were more.
Okay. And that means plus no raise that year.
Correct. And not only that, going forward, the raises that people got were 1% to 2%, period. Mm-hmm. So it takes years to get back to where you were back then.
At 1% or 2%, you're not quite keeping up with inflation,
Correct.
Which is probably
Correct.
2 or 3
and
minimum.
Yeah. And so what people are getting now is a standard form contract. Your raise is baked in. They're hiring cheap. And
because they can, because
they
a lot of people want to get
they
into
it. They discovered, hey, you know what? We're not really taking a beating on this. People are still knocking down the doors to work here. We don't have to pay people what we were. And also, to be fair to management, because I do try to be fair that way. It is a tougher business. I mean, there's a lot more competition. There's internet, there's cable, there's satellite, there's video games, there's YouTube. There are any number of other things.
We assumed television was king and we assumed it would be forever. And there are many other media.
All that's true. Still, the market capitalization of my former employer, which split off $70 billion that went to Disney at the beginning of this year, the market cap is still $20 billion. So what remains of Fox, Fox News Channel, Fox News Properties, Fox-owned and operated stations around the country, is still a huge behemoth of a company. And you're telling me that they have to pay people at this low, low point?
Well, it's not the size, it's the profitability. How profitable
are
they?
You'll always hear from people in broadcasting, woe is me, we're just struggling. Mm-hmm. Every manager I ever had has always told me that, we're just trying to make ends meet. The decades roll by.
Well,
it's a very profitable industry.
If the prices are inflated and somebody buys you for a higher price, then they have to earn a decent return. They have to be making more money. It's kind of like your housing stock gets more expensive. And so the guy who just bought housing yesterday and rents it out has to rent it for more because they paid more.
Right. And, people can have this dispute, if you will, ad nauseum about how profitable the business is, how much people ought to be paid relatively speaking, and what new people should be paid, what managers should be paid, what kind of bonuses should be available to managers, what kind of bonuses should be available to employees. All that says is that there is wiggle room towards reaching labor agreements that make people happy and keep the place afloat and profitable and doing good journalism, which can't be forgotten here. And so to the question, do I see a wave of unionization in television newsrooms among talent, people on the air? Probably not. Certainly not in Phoenix, which has some antipathy to unions. Maybe in other places. There are some unions around the country with on-air people. So it's a possibility. But as wages are depressed and younger people are getting into the business, eventually they're going to hit a point where they're like, 32 grand? I can't do that forever with a 1% raise.
Though, isn't there a real bifurcation in the wages in television in particular? You have anchor people who, once they have enough currency and have a viewership sufficient that station knows that they drive viewership, then you can tie their work to revenue and their pay can be stratospheric.
It can be, although even their pay has dropped because those people, unless they really have the market by the throat, are also replaceable. Yeah. You can get a very pleasant, appealing person to read the news and bring another
pleasant,
one. You can get very
pleasant, but if we know that we're going to lose 3% of market share if person X has been there for a while, has an audience, that 3%, you know, the station knows exactly what that means in terms of revenue. And it's that increment that is paying them, really not as a journalist, but as an that's the profit part. The journalism part is you can buy competence for a whole lot less.
And a lot of that is your social media imprint that also drives your ratings, your familiarity with the audience, and how you can be monetized for the station's benefit. And sometimes you get in a situation, in my opinion, where a news presenter who's popular enough can actually kind of outrank the boss, outrank the news director, and make decisions editorially that a news director doesn't like, and do things that a news director is uncomfortable with. But because they're so dominant, and that's the reason that people are tuning into the station, they kind of run it in a certain sort of way.
Well, they have power at that point.
Right. They do have power.
I mean, that's why the thing that was utterly shocking to me recently at the Republic was, of all the people you had cut to cut Benson, boggled my mind, because I said if there was probably one person that was probably more known even than the columnist. And most people don't notice who's writing the news articles.
No. He was a reason to read the Republic every day.
Yeah. You'd turn to Benson, even if you didn't read the news, as I said. That just shocked me.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm noticing that a lot of young people who are getting into the business don't look at things the same way that a news reporter who's 45 might look at things. They're a lot less patient, and they think the situation is unjust. They're working really hard, and they don't really see a way to really make a decent living down the road in journalism. And it's happening a lot in the digital space, and it's happening a lot with newspapers. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think it's going to happen with television stations, at least in certain limited ways. We want a guaranteed minimum wage, at least a minimum amount of salary, and some better workplace conditions.
And that's my sense between the – we didn't talk about it here directly, but the folks that I have talked to at the Republic, my sense is that the primary impact of unionization will be most heavily in the base pay, the starting salary.
Right.
Possibly at the expense of some of the more senior people.
That could be. And that might be an internal discussion that employees are having.
Not that you necessarily cut the senior people, but they see smaller or non-existent raises.
And everyone's kind of working together, and they're also competing for better and better positions, becoming columnists, for example, or in the television space, becoming anchors instead of being reporters, or being specialty reporters instead of street
reporters. But the characteristics of those is those are far and few between.
Right.
There's only you know, three or four anchors in a station. There's only four or five columnists at a newspaper, and there are many, many people toiling in the fields.
That's right, and those are the people in television world, video editors, for example. I mean, some of them, my experience were, you know, a lot of them were moonlighting. They were bartenders. They were doing all kinds of other jobs because they couldn't make it just doing that job. Mm-hmm. Videographers, you know, some of them are paid pretty well. Some of them really aren't.
Some of them lost their jobs when you guys started to have to haul your own cameras around.
True.
So we'll be back with Steve Kraft and do a wrap on this. And we'll get back specifically to the Republic a little bit more when we return for a final segment on unionization and journalism in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Steve Kraft here. We're doing a wrap here on this topic of unions in general and the Arizona Republic in particular. Off line, we were talking about kind of the historical context of this. We seem to get movement for unions when there's stress in the workplace.
Right. I mean, if you go back to the 1890s, when the progressive era was born and before Theodore Roosevelt became president, there was a lot of violence among, you know, and
both sides.
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
You're talking about real money. I mean, right. They had Rockefeller had miners shot.
Sure,
and then tried to unionize.
So we had the Sherman Antitrust Act, and eventually they mm-hmm. worked on that. But in terms of the union movement itself, you go to the 30s. We had the Great Depression, and when people were trying to unionize in auto plants and
they
mines,
invented some protections for unions.
Right, the National Labor Relations Act of 1935.
And I think that's what we're going to see at the Republic is that if they're basically they get a certain number of signatures on a petition that we want to union election, NLRB will be in there. They will run the election. It'll be fair and honest.
And, yeah,
and my think is, my guess is they'll get their union.
Well, it's a very elaborate system, and they follow a tremendous number of rules by the book in order to certify a union or not to certify a union. And that's to protect managers, it's to protect employees, and to make sure the process is done fairly and impartially. Think of it as a referee or a baseball umpire.
You know,
they're just trying to make sure that people's whatever the people want to do is respected.
You know, the interesting thing to me is that if you look at the history of unions, we look backwards and say, you know, working 7 days a week, working in unsafe conditions, and all kinds of things, health benefit, whatever. Labor was in a horrible situation, and one side held all the power. And the labor movement did a great deal to rectify that. But it's interesting that I think that's now all baked into the cake, you know, 5 day work week, some vacation, some health care, some of this, that. And people don't necessarily credit unions for that. And as a result, there are lots of segments where there is great antipathy towards unions, and you hear things, and these stories are real too. People have been in unions and they got their hands slapped by the union because they worked too hard or they didn't, they helped out by doing something that their contract didn't let, you know, you got mental image of six people sitting around waiting for the one person who's allowed to do this.
That was very true in television. I worked at a union shop in Chicago where if I were to pick up a videotape, I would a grievance would be filed against me. I mean, I'm very aware of the pluses and minuses of unions. Unions can get in the way of innovation. They can get in the way of flexibility. And there have been corrupt unions. Everybody knows that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that is not a secret. So you have to be very clear-eyed about
this whole
business.
There have also been corrupt companies, but the union, yeah, and I guess it—
And there absolutely have been corrupt companies.
You know, it's kind of like you expect the union should be cleaner. I mean, not historical, but that if they are supposed to—it's more galling if a union is corrupt than if a company is corrupt. You know, companies set up to make business. You sort of expect that a little bit. Union, no, that's not. It's kind of like a church, not living by their creed.
Unions really come to the fore when we get to a point where people feel like they're really getting taken advantage of. And I think standing back and looking at not just the Republic and not just broadcast television and radio and all that and digital media, but just people generally, if we get more and more towards a gig economy and more towards people who are working 50 or 60 hours a week and they still can't make enough to reasonably raise their family and they're mired and just hanging on paycheck to paycheck.
And there is a lot of – we have very low unemployment right now, but the gig economy is a big part of that.
Yeah. And you saw what just happened in California where they just passed this – where they're just passing this law that's going to say, yeah, if you drive for Uber or Lyft, you're not a contractor. You're an employee.
And that, as an employer, I will tell you, that imposes some cost and a whole lot of paperwork.
And that's going to be something that Uber is already refusing to recognize, and it's going to be a tremendous battle. But it's a much larger question, not just for that company, but across the country, where it's getting harder and harder for people who are working hard to make a decent living, or what they regard as a decent living. And that's where unions become more strong.
Yeah. And as a result, I mean, we have the places that have been unionized has been declining in this country for decades, but it's because those sectors that were traditionally unionized have been declining.
Oh, they've been automated.
Manufacturing being the big one.
Yeah.
The industrial unions were the biggest ones.
Sure.
So you're seeing union movement in things that are growing now, healthcare, public employees. And some of the professions you see teachers maybe you see journalists not a large segment of the population but a conspicuous one
survey after survey when the question comes out, what are some of the worst fields to get into? Journalism is like one of the top 10 professions that is one of the most worker abusive type fields to get into.
because so many people want to get into it, because from the outside it looks glamorous.
Right.
It is interesting.
It can be glamorous.
If you're a public affairs, that's why I'm here.
Right.
You know, because
you're a news junkie.
I'm a policy wonk.
Yeah.
And I go home and I absorb all kinds of news
and you
from all kinds
share
of
it.
Sources. Not because I have to, but because that is the nature of my interest.
And people told me when I got into it, look, you're going to work crazy long hours and all that, but it's a calling. And I'm sympathetic to that. It is a calling, and I'm tremendously grateful that I was able to work in it as long as I was able to. But by the same token, there has to be some sort of balance.
Yeah. And you see, for example, in this newsroom and in others, mid-career, a lot of these folks sort of go to the dark side. They leave their career in journalism, and they become the public relations spokesman for government or private industry, and they basically bring with them understanding of the journalistic world, and they have value that they can cash in.
And I can totally understand why people do that, because you have a much more regular hours. You're off on Christmas. You know, I worked so many years where Christmas was just another work day for me.
Yeah. You know, not unlike congressional staffers. Much sought-after jobs, hard as all get out to get in order to work for really minimum wage. And at some point you get to be 35 or 40 or something like that, and some lobbyist firm comes by, talks about adding another zero on your salary, and at some point it looks attractive.
That's true.
Even though it's not why you got into the thing in the first place.
No, it's because you had to do it. You're just people who are in that world. They just have to be in that world. And there are a lot of people who are in the news business because there's really nothing else they'd ever want to do.
Mm-hmm.
They're news junkies. They've been newsroom rats, I'd call them.
Well, you know,
from high school on.
I spent many, many years on the other end of the camera, the microphone, walking in the newsroom, doing an interview. And I walk into a place like this and I say, wow, these people actually get paid to do this?
I remember on Fox 10.
And which everybody would say is, oh, but not that much.
Remember on Fox 10, you were an election expert after year?
Yeah.
You were there.
Yeah, one point or another, every station in town, I think.
Pretty much.
The first one was 1980, Channel 3, during which, forgotten little piece of history, Barry Goldwater won his final election only when they counted the absentee votes, which back then was a small number.
Over Schultz, was it?
Yeah, Bill Schultz.
Bill Schultz.
Never heard from him since.
Wow.
Anyway, thank you, Steve Kraft, Rebecca Sanders. We will see you next week in the Think Tank. And you can catch episodes of the show at KTR.com and older ones at MichaelNeal.org. See you next week in the Think Tank. And sirens call them on.